Here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, founder of the Heartfelt Foundation, and other organizations dedicated to improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about MSIA.
All of the games of chance, all of the games of sport, almost every game we play has an element in who's in control. And we know who's in control by who wins. And he wins who endures to the end. So the end one will be in control. But the end one will be the only one here, and they're going to be awful lonely in control of nothing. There'll be nobody here. And they won't know how to control themselves, or they won't, if they did, they wouldn't feel lonely. They'd feel superior. But the end result is loneliness or aloneness. We have to sit down and agree which areas you're going to be in control of, which I am, which you are, which you are, which you are, which you are. And then we all get to take, so we call it president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, this committee, this group, this organization, this committee, this group. And we line it up with rules and regulations. And as long as we all follow those, we all get to control our area. We all get to say what goes on in our area. And we all hope it's right, so that we never get challenged in it or voted out of office or whatever. The masses are not necessarily who is in control. It's the power ones who are in control. Because if you take all the Chinese and the Japanese and put them at war against the United States, we'll have almost all of them killed within 100 days by forms of nuclear bombs that are much more powerful. They're not named yet in modern vocabulary. It might take 5 or 10 across all of China and Japan, and there won't be anything living there. You know, maybe a germ or microbe, but that would end it. If it came down to power, but who has power has the threat of control also. As soon as we heard that North Korea had an atomic bomb, the threat of the power of the atomic bomb taking control over that area caused us all to react and to really start to go after them and embargo them and punish them and beat on them so they could not have something to challenge our control. When I was in Syria last year, I said, there's no way Israel should be scared or frightened of Syria. First of all, there's nothing really big in Syria. And Damascus, that was once called the Pearl of the Orient, is now the trash dump in the local sewer heap. These are not second world countries or third world countries. These are fourth and fifth world countries. You could bomb almost every one of them before they could get their National Guard out of bed. You know, and I don't mean to put them down negatively. I'm trying to give you a relative set of ideas so you can see how ready they are versus how ready we are. Now, most cities and countries have seatbelt laws. If you don't wear a seatbelt, you get a ticket. If somebody's going to force a law on you, they must immediately force the ability to enforce it. And the only way they can do that is every time you close the door, the seatbelt comes over and straps you in. And that's the only way they can do it. Other than that, we just will not do it. One thing for sure, they're setting up controls that are independent of who's controlling what. And those are called rules and regulations. And what do we do with rules and regulations? How many of you here drive a car? How many of you, keep your hand up. How many of you, if you've gone over the speed limit at any time, if you've done that, keep your hand up. So much for control signs, right? In other words, you can put your hands down, all that sign is a suggestion for the speed on that road. No way is that going to stop you. freedom is equated with no control. No boss, no authority, no power. That is like what your freedom equates to. Freedom doesn't equate to that. Freedom is an absolute quality of beingness that encompasses all things in it. You can have control or give up control with equal equanimity. It's like, you're the boss. Okay, you're the boss. Somebody come back and say, you're the boss. You go, okay, I'm the boss now. Okay, now you're the boss. Now you're the boss. And what are we concerned about? We get out of the ego feeling of how we feel, because it's addictive, like angers are addictive. And we just say, what is it, the goal that is to be accomplished? And how does my control fit into getting that goal accomplished? You have to lay the plan out so somebody else buys your goal. So it's called marketing, PR, salesmanship. You've got to transfer your vision into their head so they own the vision and take control and run with it. But that make you feel good because you're getting what you want done, which is the control you're getting exercised, is getting the results. Maybe it's money, maybe it's land, maybe it's getting rid of something, whatever. I mean, everybody defines it according to their own karmic flow. But I know one thing that's very important. Once you lose control, get out of that area as fast as possible. Because there's a tendency for the one who takes control to want to beat the other one. If you go up, you see two kids on the street fighting, and one comes with a club and hits the other person, and if he takes the club away, what's he going to do with it? He's going to beat the soup out of the person who brought the club. So once they grab the club, you take off running. Hopefully you can run faster than they can with a club. My dad told me once, if you're going to get in a fight, never take a club with you. And I said, why? Because, you know, it's like you hit them once. He says, if they take it away from you, they'll bash your brains in. I thought, oh, my God, they would, because I would. And I talked to a lot of people, and they go, yeah, I would. Involuntarily, I would just almost swing back on them. And that's just the addictive quality of control working. There's a thing called, I want to get even. But it's not, I want to get even. It's, I want to get even and in control so they can't get back at me. That way I've gotten even. But if we were just to get even, we'd go, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And that's even. Then we walk away, but we walk away mad and angry, and we're waiting for him to do something wrong so we can jump on him at some point. So when you say, okay, we're even, get away. People say, how far? I said, so they can't hit you overnight. Make sure they got to travel to do it. In other words, make it really a problem for them to do it. Then who's in control? The one who is making the most problems is in control of the other one. See, if I can make more problems for you than you can handle, guess who's in control? Me, until you say, sorry, I'm not doing them anymore, and now you're taking back your own control. And I just look at you and I go, fine. But do I really believe you can take back control? Only verbally. Why? There's something bigger called gravity that's got control over all of us. So what do I do with gravity? I play with it. I use it to play tennis, basketball. I use it for games. I don't use it to fight and say, gravity's not going to control me, because now I'm going to be at war inside of myself with the inability to control gravity. So I don't do that. I go, no. So you see, the idea of choosing a way shows you have ultimate choice and control, because you can choose a way. You got it and walk away. But you walk away far enough, they can't get you and con you back into it. And that's why a lot of people won't return phone calls, won't return answer letters, won't do this, won't do that, because they know as soon as they do, you get control again. I have a friend that's an AA. He's an alcoholic, like an Alcoholics Anonymous. He doesn't go down the street now where there's a bar. He knows the streets around his area. He takes his kid to school by going out and going clear around the block about 2 miles out of the way to come in the back way, because it's all neighborhoods. and there's no bars in the neighborhoods. It's against the zoning. And he leaves and goes back home the same way. But if he went the direct route, he'd go right through commercial areas where there's a bar after bar after bar, and he knows he would stop for just one. And then I handled that real well, so I'll just do another one. And I handled that real well, so I'll just do the third one. By that time, it gangs up on your body, and bam, you're just drinking, and you don't even know it. So there are these things where you have to know your temptation and how to handle it. And to me, it's like avoid it. Avoid it as much as possible. But I'm quite sure most of us seek our own temptations every day. We seek it. And I would just say then enjoy it. Rather than do it and feel guilty about it, I go, no, enjoy it. You know, hope you can overcome it. But everybody's got their work cut out for them one way or another. Everyone in this room. Let's just say I was into pornography films, and I like to watch, go to these adult film stores where you go into little booths and you see whatever you want to see, if it's there. That I would go into the adult bookstore and look around at all the things, turn around and walk right back out and not purchase anything. I'd look. Then I might go in till I look at all of them, I go, it's the same thing as always. Then I would go back into where the shows are. And I'd sit in there and I'd put a quarter in it. And maybe I'd watch it all the way through, or I'd get up and walk out before it was through, saying, it's through. You get what I'm saying? And I'd finally get in there, take a dollar, put them in, watch a dollar's worth, get up and walk out and go, that's it. In other words, I'd go up to my temptation, overcome it. Go up to the next part and overcome it. But I wouldn't go right in full blast to it because I'm already caught. So I would come in and very slowly overcome. Walking into a food store, ice cream store, walk by it a lot of times, don't walk in. Then you walk in, you walk and look at what all the ice creams and everything are, and then you walk out. The next time you walk in, you look at all of them, maybe you walk out three or four times, you finally get one cone of something. And you take it out and you eat a little bit of it and throw it away. What you're doing is you're reclaiming the strength of your choices. And you're saying, well, those cones cost $1.95. Look, it's running a $400,000 person. How valuable is that to you? And you go, I threw it away because you're more valuable. Until finally, you can eat what you want, walk out, and go do something else. It's like these potato chips, where they say, I bet you can't eat just one. They go, oh, yes, I can. They eat one, and they go, well, maybe you're right, and then they eat two. It's real, real great advertising about addictive control patterns. When they put it on the board, I said, there it is. I hope people see it. They're telling you, eat our stuff and get addicted. But they didn't say that. They just said, I'll bet, and since we want to be in control, we'll take the bet. Almost all the time, if somebody bets us something, even if we think it's wrong, we'll bet. I'm one for boxing where no matter what they choose, I'll choose the other one. Why? Well, it makes it more fun to watch it. But one thing I won't do is bet money on it. See, nothing of value, so there's no sense of thrill or win a loss. At the loss, it's just a loss. So it's when we place value on it that we've got to watch out for what happens. And of course, a lot of people won't get involved with something unless there's value on it. Some value, something. And value is defined by this way, what they can use with what they win. That's what has value. If they can't use it, it has no value. So when people talk about value, I think that's what they're referring to. How do I use it? What do I get out of it? What's the value to me? And I just say, stay away from them. These words are very easy to say up here, talking to you. They are not easy to live when you go out that door. Every one of us are going to be up against that, but we're going to be further informed about it. So when part of it shows up, we're going to say, that's what he was talking about. He didn't use those words, but the idea he gave, it fits. And turn around and walk right across the street, and you get on the other side and you go, yay! What happened? Control came back to you. And you're going, I see, I can control. Self-esteem comes up inside of you. You say, I feel real good, and you walk down the street calm and peaceful. And those are the byproducts of the things that you've overcome in your environment and in yourself. You start to have peace. Why? You stop fighting with yourself. That's the first element of changing peace, is give up. I'm not going to fight. I'm just going to walk across the street. Then you stand across the street and look back at the store from across the street, if you have to. But remember, the eyes are always hungry. And if you keep looking back at that store, the hunger of the eyes is going to take you right back into that store to exactly the thing you said you just overcame. What are you doing? You're in there. I say, enjoy yourself. I mean, if it overcame you, don't fight it. Pig out at it. Get out of there. And resolve once again, I'm still going to win this. I am still going to do it. Don't put time patterns on it, because then when the time goes by and you haven't overcome it, now you get to feel bad and you fight with yourself. You get to feel guilty. You get to feel all those things. Don't feel any of those things. Just say, I lost on that one. That's the results. I'm going to be stronger next time. You will be. Honest to God, you will be. It may not be measurable. It may not be noticeable. But when you look back over 10 times, you can see where the one fit in there. You say, if that weren't in there, it would have collapsed. It was pivotal. Now, I'm of the school of thought that says, get it while it's microscopic. Because it's a cinch by the inch, and it's hard by the yard. Knock it down to the inches and just handle it. It's a more happy life. It tends to have a little boredom in it. But it doesn't have chaotic psychoses. It has a nice, firm direction. When you step on something, you know you can step there. What it does is, without wanting to have it through the ego, it gives us control over our beingness. But more appropriately, the beingness comes into control. And we don't then have to try to control anything, because our beingness is controlling everything. Now, everyone in the room has that. But we rarely get it past our ego and our personality. So if we have a trigger trait of anger where it just triggers and we just explode and we could just shoot somebody or walk out on them or hit them or whatever, that has to be treated more psychologically than it does in what we're talking about here. They probably will need a lot of therapy and maybe some medication to help hold the temper down until they present them with situations where they no longer trigger. You understand what a trigger trait is, folks? It's like you cock a gun and you pull the trigger and it just goes off and kills. That's what I'm talking about. It just goes off. And the person themselves doesn't know why. If you can find that on them when it's genetics, it's inherited. If you can find that on them when they're very young, then you can train them that that is a defense trait. And they only use it when they're being attacked. And that type of energy that is released can punch holes through walls. There's been stories of children picking up cars off their folks through this power of the trigger of anger. There's a value in it. But after it's used, then the body goes toxic because the adrenaline and other hormones are all over in the system. And if the person doesn't detox from that, and the way is water, a lot of water, and physical activity. Maybe go for a walk for a half hour till you feel it calm down, because it will leave you shaking like this. And people are shaking. They think it's out of fear or cold. It's the results of anger in the body. And if the anger has not been worked out, it starts to poison the system. And many people that have placid exterior, in the interior they may be a volcano. And they'll die of arthritis, heart attacks, or cancer. That's where that goes to kill. There's no need to die from that, because now you might say, what else? A regular exercise program drains off that energy field. Does that mean go to the gymnasium and work out for 30 minutes every day? No. It means walk around the block 15 times, or how many, and come back home. You'll feel it drain off. And it also will release fat on the body. It'll release other things out of the body. So it's to your advantage. The worst thing it'll do is it'll kill you from toxic syndromes. So I'm not saying exercise for your health. I'm saying exercise for your life. And it's nothing where you come back sweating. It isn't that type of a hard exercise. It's where you get the blood circulating and you warm up the system. You may perspire a little if it's a hot day, but it's the idea of circulating and having the toxins drop out. One person said, well, what I do now, JR, is I take water with me in a little canteen while I'm walking, and when I come back, I have drunk all the water, and it really works real well. Now, somebody's found another drink that they use that has electrolytes in it, and what it does is you're using now all of your knowledge towards your betterment. The things we've been taught in school, in universities, in workshops, if we don't use them, it's just another leaf blowing in the wind. And if we start to use them, we now become more healthy, wealthy, happy, loving and caring and sharing. And then we share the prosperity, abundance, and riches. It's a natural overflow. When I'm in those 9 or 10 approaches, I am always at peace. I give things away when I'm at peace. I'll bet you most everyone does, except if you're throwing something, if you're angry. Well, I'm talking about giving it away, handing it to somebody. Here, you have this. And there's a lot of love goes with that peace, because the peace and the love seem to be intertwined. Looking back over your life, you see there's nothing you can change in it. There's probably nothing you really would want to change. You would want to maybe if you were somebody else, but being who you are, you did what you did because you did what you did. None of it's a good or a bad. It was what was there at the time, and you did that. I would look back on it as having completed it. And if you can't look at as completed, you can say, it's completed. It's done. And let it go. Sometimes our mind goes back to see, is it completed? That's a bad approach. Because if it isn't, you know, you're back there again anyway, and there'll be something that'll end up having to be done. When I say, that's completed, I go on. And if it's not, somebody picks it up and brings it to me. But they got to bring it to me right here today, because that's where I am. And if they bring it late, like I said, this was 2 weeks old, they go, yeah, and I say, you handle it. Maybe they say, well, I forgot that I had. I said, I don't care. You handle it. It was yours when you kept it over the time period. It became yours. Write back to the person and tell them that you sit on it for 2 weeks and I didn't give it to JR like I was supposed to, so he could have answered it a week and a half ago and I would be writing you his answer. Instead, I'm writing you to explain why he hasn't answered your letter. I said, then make a carbon copy of that letter, because you're going to be writing a lot of those. Because every time you miss the deadline, it'll be yours to answer. Only happened once, when they realized I wouldn't do it for them, that we had to be mutually responsible to each other. When they got that, they became responsible to other work people around them. In other words, it started to spread. and it makes things work better. But that took me to be firm, but I didn't have to be angry. I just said, I am not going to do that. I didn't say, you messed up my life. I'm not going to do that. You want to know why? You kept it too long. I can't put it in now. Its time was then. Now I have other things whose time are here. And I'm doing them. Once you get this idea that I'm talking about, you're going to find your life, everyone will find your life settling down so that you do things very easy in a very clever, very efficient, effective way and have time left over to do many, many other things. But you won't feel the distraction of things pulling on you, like, oh, I got to do this, and I got to do this, and I got to do that, and this, and that, and this, and that, and you get nothing done, not even right here. If something happens to you right here, you don't spend the rest of your life thinking about this. This is over shortly. As soon as they say break out of the room, you should drop everything you've had up to that moment and leave and let them clean up the junk in here, but move out of the way. It's just an easier way to have that peacefulness going. If they don't clean it up, when you come back in the room, you'll clean it up also. Everyone in here is working towards one accord, and that's to find peace and harmony here and take it into the community.
John Rogers' closing words were Beirush Beishan, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.